This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for staying with us on BFM. I'm Koo Soo Chong with Tan Chen Lee and Philip C. Now, Bank Negara Malaysia, as we know, announced the five winners of the digital bank licenses last week before the country, of course, had its mega five-day break. The winners were not a complete surprise. We had these five consortiums consisting of
Boost Holdings, Sdn Bhd or Axiata, and RHB Bank, GXX Bank Private Limited, which is Grab and Singtel, and the Kwok Brothers, C Limited and YTL Digital Capital, Aeon Financial Services, which is a subsidiary of Aeon Credit and Money Lion, and CAF Investment Banks in Sdn Bhd. And the Aeon and Money Lion and CAF are actually Islamic digital banking license.
Yes, now question will be, all eyes will now be on the rollout of these services, which will take about 2 years. In the meantime, the incumbent banks are unlikely to take things sitting down. So what does this mean for the banking landscape in Malaysia?
Well, to answer this question and more, we turn now to Vincent Fong, the chief editor of Fintech News Malaysia, to discuss this. Vincent, were any of the names from the five announced a surprise to you? Were any of them a dark horse?
And definitely, I think if you look at the CAF investment, it came as a surprise to many. The CAF investment, of course, consists of MoneyMatch, Jinexu, and also Kasim as well. A little bit of an underdog situation, but as I understand it, they switched their bid to Islamic, which I suppose really helped with their chances as well. But I genuinely wish that they succeed upon launch, because I think it's been an excellent Malaysian startup story. I mean, MoneyMatch and Jinexu were both the first to graduate from Bank Negara's fintech sandbox. And Kasim, of course, is Malaysia's first unicorn, right? And it's definitely a close race. A lot of big names didn't make the bid. You know, the likes of BigPay, MyAngkasa, Sunway all didn't make the bid.
So, I mean, you mentioned those names, right? What happens to them? You know, these are the surprise losers. Would it be fair?
I guess in a way, I mean, some didn't anticipate for them to win, some did anticipate for them to win. But yeah, to some extent, it's a surprise to quite a few.
So I guess the big question here is, do you see major disruption to the major Malaysian banking landscape?
I think first and foremost, we can probably anticipate larger fundraising rounds in the horizon. If you look at 2020, when Boost was gearing up for the digital banking license, they did raise the second largest fintech funding round of $70 million. And similarly, BigPay, who although didn't succeed with the bid, they actually did raise $100 million to kind of further the digital banking ambitions. So as these players continue to wrestle for market share, hire talent, show up their digital capabilities, likely they'll need to raise a few more rounds to finance these activities. I think one commonality that you can see across these players is that they all have an existing ecosystem that they can tap into. So with that, you know, the customers have a higher propensity to adopt their service, which drives down the cost of user acquisition quite considerably. So if you compare this with other markets, this is quite consistent with the other Asian markets, which have digital banks like Korea, Hong Kong, China, Taiwan, Philippines, which is quite different from the other newer banks in the Western markets.
Yeah, Vincent, so as we know, digital bank licenses, you know, they are positioned to serve the underserved and to serve the underbanked as well. What kind of services can we expect from these five winners? And I think maybe more importantly, what kind of balance sheets do they need to support this initiative?
So in terms of the underserved, I think obviously they will mostly focus on what is already existing in their ecosystem. So, I mean, for example, if you look at Grab, then obviously the first focus would be on their gig workers, to provide them financing, to provide them insurance services and whatnot. You know, then if you look at the RHB and Boost, then one of the focus will, of course, be the micro SMEs that they already do support with their payment services. I think the key thing here is that lending is not the key benefit of securing, being able to lend to them is not a key benefit of securing the digital banking license, right? The key thing is that the cost to fund is much lower now that they can take deposits from customers.
So then I guess the question here is, the intention is to, you know, serve these under-accessed groups. Mm. But is this really not a Trojan horse where they will basically target also the middle income and mass market as well, isn't it? Because that's where the margin will be made. So that's where the banks will be affected more, isn't it? As you said, lower cost of funds, easy distribution and access already. So will this not affect the current incumbent banks then? Because the reality is that they will target those core markets, right, to deliver margin.
Naturally. So, I mean, eventually they would even quite likely target the higher end market to get better margins, right? But as a start, these are the low-hanging fruits that they will be focusing on first. But for the most part, I think incumbents are fairly safe in the next 5 to 7 years. Because as you said earlier, right, it'll take 1 to 2 years to set up. And then they will remain within the foundational phase within the next 3 to 5 years after they launch, which kind of limits the asset size to be within 3 billion, right? So that really puts a cap on how much deposit they can take and subsequently how much they can give out financing as well. So in that period, still quite safe, but I wouldn't rest on my laurels if I was an incumbent bank.
Yeah, so Vincent, for the target markets, which, you know, maybe may not be desired by the incumbent banks, right? Because they, you know, obviously they're higher risk. But what kind of, how expensive will these products and services be to these target markets? Will it be, you know, will it be tough for them to access these products?
Yeah, so I think maybe you are also thinking about a recent case about a certain e-wallet that may have launched a lending product with very high effective interest rate. For the most part, I believe these digital banks will not be offering products at those rates, because in the case of that product, because the loan is underwritten by an incumbent bank, and I think their risk appetite is probably a little bit different. With the case of these digital banks, I think with the digital capabilities, with better alternative scoring and with better risk appetite, I think we probably will see more favorable interest rates.
So what's next in terms of rollout? How soon will any of these digital banks be operational? And do you have any sense of the regulatory, technical and prudential requirements?
I think 1 to 2 years is pretty standard. Hong Kong was about 1 year. Singapore, about 1 year in, they are about to launch, but they haven't really launched yet. Even Bank Negara said, you know, the audit readiness process will take between 12 to 24 months. The requirements are quite clearly laid out in the framework and the FSA. List is quite exhaustive, but I don't remember the full requirements. But
No, go ahead.
But I think, of course, the key challenges will be... tech is one thing. Tech, I think the providers are all out there. The key challenges is now you have 5 banks all trying to hire the same talent at the same time. And then you have all the incumbent banks trying to keep their talent, right? So it's going to be a bit of an interesting situation.
So 2 years to get it running, 3 years with the capital requirements. So you've got about a 5-year kind of a holding period. But if you're in the shoes of an incumbent traditional bank, what would be your advice and counsel to them to combat and address these startups?
I think just really shore up your digital capabilities. Really look at where you can introduce new innovative services. But, you know, these incumbent banks, they are not exactly sleeping on the job. They are actively looking into these things and they're doing a reasonable job. So, you know, just continue with the digital journey and just keep an eye on the ball. You know?
Do you think M&A is likely a possibility between these digital banking licenses and the conventional banks? Do you think that's a likely outcome after about 4 or 5 years?
Possible. There's also a possibility that some of them might not survive, right? So if you look at a couple of years back in Australia, there was a fully licensed bank called Zinja, which is kind of a digital bank. Within 1 year, they unceremoniously had to return their license because they couldn't fund the business.
And Vincent, very quickly before we let you go, which of the incumbents are maybe a bit slow and which have to up their game?
I think there is quite a number. I don't want to be naming names, but quite a number of them, I think, really need to step up their game. And quite a few of them are doing quite well, you know, but I don't want to be pointing fingers here.
And very quickly, since we talk about deposit taking, so naturally wealth management may come into play as well. So what about people like robo-advisors and all that? Do you think there would be some merging of the players in this space?
they could even work together, you know. So I think there's some potential for them to have conversations in this space.
Yeah, that was Vincent Fong, Chief Editor of Fintech News Malaysia, on the digital bank licenses. And look, I mean, just in terms of the limited asset size that digital banks have got in front of them, they don't really at this point in time pose a huge systemic risk to the conventional banks, but they've got 3 to 5 years of foundational, you know, kind of like a headwind, right? Headroom. So there's some time left.
Yeah, I think you're saying there is no short-term impact. But you know what I'm interested to see in terms of impact? It's in about 1.5 minutes, Bursa will open. And I want to see how the counters respond to the award of the 5 licenses. We have 3 categories here. The conventional bank counters, right? Maybank, CIMB, how will they look like? The winners, right, which we saw, RHB and such. And the losers as well. I'm quite keen to see how the counters shape up later in the next just under 1 minute.
I think we should have a wager. My wager is that there'll be no reaction.
Well, perhaps so, because of low trading volume. But I think there are also many things that are going to shape activity very shortly. The SE resignations also could affect investor sentiment. I'm not sure. We have about 40 seconds to count down.
And as a takeaway from the call with Vincent, I am actually quite interested to see what these 5 winners will offer in terms of their rates, deposits and lending, whether it's going to be on par with what the rest of the incumbent banks are already offering.
Value proposition and customer segments will be very key to watch out for.
Yeah, that's because these are financially underserved. And also, that means they're also higher risk. So how expensive will these products and services be? Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.